thank you. We'll slowly open your eyes. There are a number of schools I work with where the teachers start their morning classes with quietness. And they find that the students who have been rushing around got to come in, they settle down, they have that minute of quietness, and they're able to engage in a much more steady fashion. For all of us, finding that quietness is really incredibly important, even as we take on these huge tasks of racism, homophobia, social class, and as our morning speaker indicated, the kind of the shift in our country from the 2016 elections and what lies ahead. We all need that kind of centering that that quietness gives. So I'd like to talk a little bit about transcendental meditation and how I think it can be a great partner for you in the work of life. I want to walk through a few slides that show you some research. I want to describe actually how you learn transcendental meditation, how you practice it over time, and then I'd love to take questions from you and introduce you to some of the local folks. I'm from Chicago. There are, as you know, a table kind of right outside with the local TM teachers. Our good colleague Vic is here, who is a practitioner and teacher of TM. There's another young woman who just returned and is now a new practicing TM teacher I'd like to introduce you to. So there are a lot of resources here. And I want to finally talk about the new program that we have going in TM People of Color and the structure of that program. So, I want to talk a little bit about how TM has come to be seen as a resource to communities of color, and not only now, but over time. We've seen it as an antidote to reducing stress, to improving health. The whole notion of cognitive function is something that I've really appreciated working in schools. How we improve the organizational efficiency of groups and organizations we work with. And this idea of building strong relationships across difference is really crucial. And finally, how this notion of empowerment is really impacted by meditation. I'd like to go back to the experiences that you were reflecting on that you may have had. I'm thinking about also the gentleman who spoke Dr. Ford's address, who indicated he had someone very close to him who was killed by the police. How do we deal with that stress within our nervous system? Because the more stress we have, the shorter our lives are, quite frankly, and how it impedes our own functioning. And while a so-called good night's sleep is great, the stress continues to accumulate. Unless we find a way to throw it off, it will impact our quality of life. But the other thing I was thinking about as Dr. Ford was speaking is, okay, so let's say, as a person of color, I have internalized racism. Besides knowing that, how do I get rid of it? As white people, you know, who have white privilege, even recognizing that, how do you deal with sometimes the shame that comes with that, or the humiliation, or whatever? I mean, how do we confront that? Get it out of our nervous system. How do we deal with the implicit bias? One of the things I think that we can do certainly is to know it, to own it, to confront it. But the other thing I want to do is to change. Like, I don't want to carry this around with me forever. And so this backpack of stress is something that I want to move on from my nervous system, but I also want to, you know, I don't want to forget that racism exists, but I don't want it burdening me down. So I want to talk a little bit about this whole notion of reducing stress and improving health, and then improving my cognitive functions. So I have this idea, our time is really short, but I'd like you to choose somebody, probably somebody sitting next to you, and I want you to think about an experience of, since we're talking about community of color, a racial incident. And I want you to share with your partner what that incident was that you can think of. We won't go through the experience in your body. But I just want to see how prevalent this notion of racism and stress is in your life. So turn to your partner. Think about an incident that's happened recently. You don't have to go back to 1968, but something recently where race or even this notion of social class was involved. And then we'll talk about it. We want to see how prevalent it is in your life.
Practice 20 minutes twice a day. I want to reiterate this notion of practice.
There are many people who have been doing TM for 10, 15, 20 years. And I'd like you to think of it as like brushing your teeth. You brush your teeth in the morning, you brush your teeth in the afternoon. And if you do that regularly, maybe you won't see the dentist or the periodontist, if you're honest. But if you do this regularly, the results begin to accumulate. So it's a practice done regularly. On my way down here, I did it in the airplane. I did it in the taxi the guy was driving me on. You do it kind of regularly, the time rolls around, it's time to do it. It's, again, simple, mental, doesn't require any concentration, doesn't require anything, but just as we experienced earlier, just sitting quietly, close the eyes, and practicing the technique. Many people oftentimes will say, well, is it a religious practice? Will it interfere with my faith? Will it interfere with other things in my life? And again, people of all faiths have different practice. I think maybe the opposite would be true. It enhances our faith practices, our belief systems, etc. And it gives you access to this state of mind and body called restful alertness. Because what you will find with the practice of TM is that the body gains deep rest. Oftentimes defined as deeper than deep sleep. At the same time, the mind is in a state of heightened alertness. It's almost a contradiction because you will think maybe of sleep when the mind goes into different phases of sleep, including rapid eye movement, etc., and you're unconscious. And then if something happens and you start to wake up. In TM, the mind is alert even as the body gains deep rest. I should also say that transcendental meditation comes from an ancient tradition, the Vedic tradition, oftentimes described as India. It was there that the founder of transcendental meditation, Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, kind of learned it, was directed to come to the West and spread it around, and I met him many, many years ago. He took a chance and made me a TM teacher. And he said something very important to me. I want you to go across the United States, starting in New York, ending up on the West Coast, and teach TM in communities of color. At the time I was living in Seattle when I finished my teacher training program, I said, okay, I remember what he said, but I'm going home to Seattle. Since then I found myself in Boston, Washington, D.C., I'm in Chicago. Maybe one day I'll get back to the West Coast. But it's been a real pleasure moving across the country, providing transcendental meditation in these communities of color. I encourage you to look at the research on TM. There are many studies, a plethora of studies, in almost every field you can imagine. And as scientists yourself, you may find that research very helpful in your own lives. I will summarize some of it. I'm going to come back to this video in a moment. But I want to say, for instance, in Chicago, we've been working with a number of agencies. One of them, Fathers, Families, and Healthy Communities, we developed a transcendental meditation program for fathers who were non-custodial parents. And they learned how to meditate. We met every week. I'm still meeting with them. The numbers that are, the men who are taking this are growing, and it's a very interesting cohort of people. Many of the dads have been incarcerated. One of the dads showed me bullet holes, wounds in his arm. All of them, though, are absolutely dedicated to their children. Many of them are working on their relationship with their children's mother. But this is a group of men, we probably find this group in every city in the United States, who were looking for ways to confront the stress and deal with the stress in their lives and also be better dads. So this is a great program. If there's interest in any of the areas you all represent, I'd love to share with you kind of the outline, because the men will come back to me, and one said, I meditate, but now I'm finding that instead of responding in anger, frustration, or violence, I'm pausing. I'm pausing for a moment to think about the best response before I act. For me, it's very interesting because it's moving from that fight or flight area of the brain, the amygdala, and moving around the prefrontal cortex where we can judge the consequences. And while I didn't describe it to them that way, it was very interesting for the number of men who came back to say, I'm positive before I act. I'm going to come back to, I've got three videos I'm going to come back to, but I want to show you a little bit about how TM works. We all know that kind of this active thinking level of the brain, 10, 15%, 16, 17, 20 if we're lucky, is the active thinking that goes on consciously. And what happens during the process of TM is that we go off of this active thinking level of the brain, through the quieter, subtler levels of the brain, until we kind of experience this quietness. Not unlike what you experience when I ask you to close your eyes, but it's at a deeper level, perhaps the deepest level of the mind. And as the word suggests, we transcend deep thinking to go to this area of what we call pure consciousness. You can think of it as a reservoir of energy, of consciousness, that we acquire a habit of going to on a regular basis, tapping into that and bringing the results back to the surface. One would experience just being quiet, and then at some point not even being distracted by the noise and the sound around us, if that sound is no barrier to this process. And as a result of kind of the mind going to this deep level of pure consciousness, the body also experiences a very deep level of rest. These two notions combine for what I referred to as restful alertness earlier. Low metabolic rate, coherent brain functioning, reduce stress, kind of building up the nervous system. You know, that fight or flight reaction starts pumping adrenaline and all kinds of things through our nervous system so that we can defend ourselves. Sometimes that gets triggered inappropriately, and we find ourselves in fight or flight when all we have to do is just move aside and move on. One of the guys in my program said, if somebody walked by me and kicked me, I'd get ready. I said, get ready for what? He said, I get ready to do whatever I have. I said, he just bumped into you. But in his mind, and maybe even this is conditioned by being behind bars, you always have to be ready. So, not that I want him to be vulnerable, but if every single bump results in that hormone flash through the nervous system, it starts to deteriorate. In communities of color, if just this first thing happened, a reduction of blood pressure, everybody should start meditating. Because it's an epidemic, and those of you who study this know how the plethora of these kinds of things in our communities, heart disease, headaches, insomnia, all these kinds of things impact the quality of life. And what we're finding with TM is that we begin to have these kinds of things. Reduction of substance abuse, greater energy, greater longevity. Here we are looking at the impact of deep rest in the nervous system. I'm going to move through this because our time is a little bit crazy. This is a comparison of TM to other forms of relaxation. We have things like kind of this control group up top. We have the progressive muscular relaxation technique. And then we have TM kind of showing a comparison of not only rest and relaxation, but over a period of time, the longevity of situation. Reduction of blood pressure, again, different forms of relaxation response, feedback, which was popular some years ago. The National Institutes of Health funded a study in Washington, D.C. from Howard University looking at blood pressure in the black community. Incredible feedback results, cholesterol levels. Just going to go through a few of these things. I want to get to our Q&A. Hospital admissions. This PowerPoint's available if you're interested. I can just email it to you. I wanted to show you this, though, because we talk about restful alertness, and I wanted to show you kind of the impact of brain waves for those practicing restful meditation. If you can kind of see, this is just kind of eyes closed, resting as we were doing earlier. This is what your brain looks like right now. It's kind of active, the different areas of the brain firing. And you can see with transcendental meditation, you begin to see the peaks and valleys lining up. Brain coherence increases. And the implication is that as we come out of TM and go into action, we have a more kind of focused brain, clearer thinking. And over time, again, if this was the only benefit everyone should do, if we have greater coherence in the brain, even after 2 months, 6 months, 12 months. More indications. And this notion, self-actualization. Again, going back to this idea of, well, what if I have some of these implicit biases in my nervous system? And they've been there for a while. And I don't know if any of you have ever taken the implicit attitude test. I took it, take it several times. I use it with clients. One that I took, particularly around gender and career, in my conscious mind, I'm thinking, God, I'm a woman, you know, like I think women should do whatever they want to do. My test score showed me I still, you know, have these tendencies to think in very traditional ways. This is what gender should be doing in our society. And closing that gap is interesting to think about it, but what do I actually do to close it? What are ways that we can interact with one another to close our racial gaps, our gender gaps, our sexual orientation gaps? Certainly talking about it, having relationships is one, but what if we had a way that actually worked in our physiology to also do that? So there, again, a lot of comparative data around TM and other forms of relaxation. Decreased fatigue, this is for teachers. Again, we have a number of TM programs in public schools around the country. And one of the things that teachers comment on right away is that they feel more restful. They have less fatigue. And if they have less fatigue, then they are more inclined to give whatever they have to give to children. Because we know the number one asset that builds relationships between teachers and students is that ability to understand them, to reach them, and to have authentic relationships. Based on that, the children can do whatever is asked. So we have, yeah, other forms of TM and relaxation. So, I want to pull up a video or two. I think we have time for one or two clips.
Prison inmates have been reporting some interesting benefits of practicing transcendental meditation, or TM. The TM classes have been provided by the TM Center at McIntyre Lane under the management of Jim and Sarah Anderson. The effort has been facilitated by Prison Superintendent Algernon Charter, who himself practices TM. Inmates spoke to Marpin News following a group meditation just a few days ago.
See what I started? So I started to see the change of me, actually.
In what way?
Well, it made me think about a lot of things. Things like of the past tense and now, so I can see the difference in it. Make me feel like the top of the world now.
Would you recommend it?
Yes, I could recommend for anyone.
When I first came here to prison, I was really tense and stressed.
and it helped me release stress. So I must say it's a good thing, and I would encourage anybody, my brothers and sisters, Dominicans, the world in general, to take part in it. It's a good thing.
I was full up with a lot of stress, and then this program helped me a lot. My pressure was up very high, and since I'm doing this TM, I find my pressure went very good now. It keeps you alert, and it gives you a lot of joy. If you are stressed, you get a lot of joy in TM.
Jim Anderson has taught TM in Ireland for 30 years.
We have really enjoyed teaching in the prison, and I've been very impressed actually by the men themselves and how they've actually wanted to better themselves and their experience of that they're just feeling a lot better, a lot happier, a lot freer in themselves and experiencing more joy in life. And I think that is why in other countries, when prisoners have been taught, the recidivism rate, the rate at which people come back to prison has been halved. There's no other program in the world that has been able to achieve this. And so we're very delighted that this has been made available in Dominica, because I think the people themselves want to better themselves. Everybody does. And if you give them a chance to clear their brains, to get rid of their stress, they will naturally behave better. You don't have to tell them what to do. And then when they get out of prison, they don't want to be back in again.
Anderson says in some South American countries, entire prison populations have been offered transcendental meditation.
We think that once people have enough experience of doing it, they'll realize this is a way to actually rehabilitate people. Putting people in prison does not rehabilitate them. Because as you know, mostly when people get out, they get back into the same problems they've been in. And this is something that can really help people get a much better quality of life, not only in prison, but especially when they get out, so they don't get in the same trouble again.
Over 50 inmates have been taught.
Get on to... Again, it's when you're practicing it, 20 minutes twice a day. To learn it, we actually structure courses. One learns in 4 sessions. There is kind of an introductory lecture where we talk it through. There is a session you have with a TM teacher where you actually have any questions answered. And then you establish an appointment, and then actually learning it takes place over 4 days, an hour, hour and 15 minutes each session. Then we'd like to think about, not only have we now got you rolling with your meditation, you're practicing every day, but we've created this follow-up session where we'd like to have a check-in with you over the next several months. We call this regular check-in, so it's about 20, 30 minutes. We also have at our local centers weekly sessions where you can come meditate with other folks. We oftentimes show a video or talk about some advanced knowledge around TM. And we even have what we call residential courses, a day or 2 days where you can actually spend time with other meditators going deeper into your experience. There is a course fee structure that ranges from $360 to $960 for adults. There is also kind of scholarship programs, and recently the movement put into effect a program for communities of color where there are special rates that apply to folks kind of in that area. This is my contact information, and I'd like to spend a few minutes we have left in Q&A ask any questions that you may have and see if we can offer some responses. Yes, please.
Hi, thank you so much for your presentation. I was just wondering how TM is different from programs like Headspace, online meditation guidance. Thank you.
Sure. You know, one thing is trying to share with you some of the comparative analysis, the data from different kinds of meditation programs, yoga, etc. I would say that probably what those programs are doing are fine. The distinction may be in the depth of experience that you get. You know, I've seen some of the apps, they sound fine, but will they allow you to transcend? And if you are actually watching an app, you're not doing it. It's hard to watch it and do it at the same time, right? So maybe it shows you some things that you then could go on to do. But what we know about this is that this is probably the most researched meditation practice ever. We know it's safe. We know from those who have practiced it in 30, 40, 50 years that the benefits will be there for you. So while I'm not discouraging anything else out there, because anything that gets you moving in this direction is great, I can tell you what transcendental meditation is. Yes, please.
How do you incorporate this to 20-minute
and 20-minute
session when you're trying to walk and sit down for a
right.
You know, you're working full time, you're trying to cook at home. Yes, if it lasts in this, I'm trying to figure out how people have been able to do that.
And how do you feel at the end of the day? Believe me, I had to find it myself. Get up 20 minutes earlier. Take your shower, whatever your morning routine is, but it almost has to be like that. Now, some workplaces have set aside spaces for you to do meditation, particularly the workplaces that endorse TM. So at one of the schools I work at, there is a meditation room, and people can do their meditation when they get to work. Now, that's difficult, because once you get into routine at work, you're kind of in it. But there are some places that have set tons and spaces up. I would say, as difficult as it may sound, you just have to do it. You have to either get up earlier or get everybody moving out of the house before you go and sit down and do it. But it really is kind of, I think that's part of the value of the 4 days of instruction. We actually deal with the logistics. How do I do this? The evening sounds, yeah, I can see that. I come home, meditate, eat dinner, whatever. But it's actually those 2 periods twice a day that balance all of these things. My colleague back there. Yes, David.
I was wondering, have you worked with many people that have different illnesses and how they think through and how they can think through what's going on and relax and meditate? I have taken a meditation course, so I was wondering, how do you kind of deal with that? Because you get so tense with everything that's going on. So, you know, the time, like, isn't really there sometimes.
Thank you for sharing that. You know, over the last decade or more, we've been in virtually every kind of environment you can imagine. I taught in hospitals. I've taught at Folsom Prison, I've taught, you know, just about in every kind of environment. And we taught in some wards where people were chronically ill. In those situations, we come in and we do the whole program with them, and then there are special instructions oftentimes about how you can continue to do your meditation as you're getting the kind of help that you need from the medical community. And once you leave the hospital, again, there are ways that you can continue to do it, work it into your routine. Most doctors will encourage you to do something like this because it's a non-pharmacological intervention that really does help the nervous system find itself. So if you have specific questions, I'd love to talk to you afterwards about how we can adapt this to your own. Yes, sir.
Most of us, of course, are interested in how this can help us personally, but we're also public health people, and from a public health standpoint, the possibility that this could actually transform a school so that suspensions and fighting and so on could be reduced and the kids could actually have more chance to learn. You've been teaching TM now in Chicago schools. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, and we actually had a video if anybody wants to stay behind. I'll be glad to share it with you. We are teaching TM in seven Chicago public school locations in the hardest hit neighborhoods of the South and the West Side, and one of the North Side. And I can tell you, many of the children actually find kind of almost sanctuary in the school, but it's they have to go home too. And you know, if you're following any of the news about Chicago, and anyway, there are a lot of shootings and whatnot, and that oftentimes happens in those same neighborhoods. We have been able to teach close to 800 children to meditate in Chicago public schools, and the results have been really astonishing. We're supported by some of the biggest foundations in the country, and the research is being underwritten by the University of Chicago School of Social Work. So they're watching this very carefully, and it was based on their recommendations that the foundations extended their funding to us. And what we find is that, you know, the children are great. It's just they're dealing with stress. And it's not like they want to come to school and have a fight. It's just the residual stress almost provokes, like I said, you bumped up against me, like, let's go. And when that stress goes away, and there's a video I will show you, the kids, you can almost see in their body language and the way they carry themselves that the stress is going away. And they begin to, as their mental energy shifts towards the prefrontal cortex, they begin to judge the consequences of action. So wait a minute, what's going to happen if I hit him versus just continuing to walk down the hall? And even on a larger scale, where's my life going? And so these are some of the stories we're seeing from the kids that we work with in the schools. And I'll tell you one story I have that I love. I was checking one of the young men that I instructed, just our regular check-in. I said, how's this going? He says, fine. I said, have you noticed anything different? He said, not really. I said, so there's nothing really changed in your life? He said, no. I said, okay, we'll just keep it. He said, but wait a minute, there is one thing I'm concerned about. I said, well, what is it? I said, I walk down the hall and I'm happy. And what's wrong with me? I said, what do you mean? He said, well, I start smiling. And people look at me like, I said, it's okay. You know, from his side, it was so unusual just to find this kind of internal happiness and joy that he thought that was something we had done to him. You know, was wrong. But there's lots of stories like that of children learning to meditate and finding their own, in their own words, the direction of their life. So that's some of the best reasons why we teach in the school. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you for your presentation. I definitely understand the need to give kids toolkits to fix the stressors, but I also struggle a little bit with fixing the person versus fixing the structural factors. Do you have any examples of like multi-level solutions that have been used?
Thank you. And again, the first thing I said when I got up here is that presentation that anchors the conference is something I believe in as a diversity educator, like we really have to look at systemic issues. That's why, for instance, we were approaching the Chicago Police Department. And when I had conversations with them, I asked at that time the commissioner, well, what are you doing to abate the stress of your officers? He said, well, really nothing. I said, so you see all this going on, and he said, you know, I'm thinking as you're talking that there are some divisions that I would like to place this in. And I think one of the values of TM is it can go into those structures and begin to impact people in the way they interact. Now, I think we still have to do our work. We still have to confront internalized depression, racism, bias. I think we need that kind of understanding. I think where TM plays a role is it comes in and starts to dissolve stress in the nervous system. And those things which we may be holding on to around racism, homophobia, sexism, social class issues, are in our body. And if we can find a way to neutralize those as we do the other work, I think it's a great combination. So I see the two joining forces. Yes, ma'am.
Reduce the stress with the stress hormone cortisol, and I want to know if you also did a comparison between genders as far as male and female and the differences and how it affects them.
There may be that research that I can turn you off from the
mindfulness. I try to at least, you know, going back to the time thing where do you squeeze it in. But how do you translate what we've already learned, you know, from mindfulness as this kind of buzzword to practicing true TM?
So mindfulness is great. I have a lot of respect for at least the mindfulness techniques that I know of. And it's something, for instance, we're using with police departments. Before you act, you know, go through the checklist. And so I think mindfulness has been helpful there. What mindfulness, the distinction may be actually in the depth of the experience. And I'm, again, not, you know, dissing mindfulness because I think it's useful, but if you want to transcend and go to this deeper level, and connect with that reservoir and do it time and time again, I think that's where it distinguishes itself with TM. But I think mine was, at least some of the ones I know are great. You can take the knowledge from here, the experience you have to be taught. And just, I think, knowing that there is a way to get there and drive a pipe into it that you can continually pull up from, I think that's the knowledge. The experience you have to be taught.
I work with a yoga club at my high school, and it's like an optional thing, and it seems like some of the work that you work with is kind of an established program, so kids like have to do it and they don't choose to do it. And sometimes I struggle with like attracting people, attracting other students like me to do yoga, to do meditation in our club. So I'm wondering, what do you think are ways to show like students that are in high school like the value of this?
Great question. Oftentimes we have ambassadors, the students who have done it and are experiencing it, to talk to other students about it. And it's always opt-in. We never force kids to do this. We have had a number of students who have done it and have stopped. And then at some point they may come back. So we're kind of always open to getting them started again. But I think our ambassadors have been the ones that really have been kind of the sellers. And they actually, in many cases, start the group meditations. You know, they instruct everybody to close your eyes. And so in that way, they are participating in the pedagogy around meditation and the ownership. And sometimes they're the ones that answer questions that other students may have. So that's kind of one way that we deal with participation. We have them actually in leadership roles. I don't know if that answers your question. It is, can I take one more?
Sure.
Yes, ma'am.
$960
for a session like a training. What advice do you offer them if they're debating whether to practice TM or some other form of meditation that costs? Gotcha. Great point. So, and I put it up there so that you would see it. I didn't want you to not see the cost of this thing. The one thing I can say is that, of course, there are payment plans and all that. But there's also now a program to advance TM in communities of color, which we can talk about. Sometimes that impacts the cost and lowers the fee and whatnot. But we also have scholarships through our local center, and there are national scholarships. So the price is there, but I don't want it to totally derail your practice of TM. So glad to talk to you about that. Thank you all.
Have the poster and exhibits, and then we have lunch at 12:30. And that, I think you should have a voucher that you got with your registration. So thank you. Give please give a hand to.